Ever since the time of the great Rabbi Isaac Luria, the Kabbalists and other Jewish mystics tell the story of creation something like this. In the beginning, before the beginning that we hear about in the Torah, before the beginning, everything was super saturated God. There was nothing but God. There was no thing other than God. No room for creation, no room for anything else. Just completely eternal, nothing moving, nothing changing, Godness. And if you can imagine it, in that sacred solitude, God was lonely, longing for somebody to have relationship with, somebody to love. And there was no other. But then an idea came to God, and God contracted into one part of the everything saturatedness and left another part that was a little bit less saturated, a space. This was a process called tzimtzum, this contraction. And that space, the halal hapanui, as Rabbi Nachman calls it, the void. Unfortunately, that space is the source of all evil. But it also made possible creation. It made space for something other than just God, saturated Godness. So into that space, God created 10 vessels, the sefirot, which you may have heard about in other study of Kabbalah, these 10 emanations or aspects of divinity that were like little vessels. And God began to pour the infinite light into each of them, and all would have been completely perfect, except that it seems even God made some kind of miscalculation. And those sacred vessels couldn't contain the infinite light, and they shattered. And I think about, you know, that shattering echoing through existence. I think that the echoes of it were in Jeremiah's call last night that we talked about, his wail of despair. That shattering is in our world still. Now, when the vessel shattered, they shattered into a bunch of tiny little sparks. So there was the light itself, which made this little coating on the inside of the vessels, and that light, called a reshimu, stuck to the vessels, and the vessels themselves had divinity in them, and they were little sparks, and they descended into all of creation as we know it. And they were exiled and dispersed among all the physical stuff of our world, all the experiences and events and, you know, podiums and everything. And it created this state of imperfection that is only rectified by tikkun, which you may have heard of, this word tikkun olam, right? This is where the word comes from, tikkun olam. And I'm going to move to a source. This is a Hasidic telling that from the Noam Elimelech that tells us about these sparks. He says, elevating the sparks back to their original source, you know, picking up those pieces, this is accomplished by performing the will of the Almighty in this physical world through Torah and its commandments, the mitzvot. The sparks of holiness that are scattered among the world from the breaking of the vessels were swallowed up by the klipot, literally shells or husks. Thus, the good holy spark is like a fruit or a nut, which is surrounded by an outer shell or peel. In order to eat and benefit from the goodness of the fruits, one must first break the shell or remove the peel, and so too everything in this world has an outer exterior, a false shell, that can be peeled away to reveal its true inner beauty. So that's how creation went, according to the Kabbalists and the mystics and the lineage of Hasidic masters who made those stories available to ordinary people like us. Our job as humans, according to this story, is no less than to assist God in transforming darkness into light, repairing God's shattered self by living our lives in holy and sacred ways, lifting holy sparks hidden even in the mundane, even in ugliness, even in suffering, even in sin, even in ordinary things. I want to just show you one thing, an ordinary thing that has a lot of sparks that I think Or Shalom has revealed. Hold on a second. Okay. You might think, looking at this object, oh, it's cute. It represents something sacred, right? It looks kind of like a Torah. It is a Torah, but it's ordinary. It is a stuffed animal. It is a plush toy, right? It is a I just had it. It was just in the children's service on the floor, being snuggled by a bunch of kids with a bunch of snot, Okay, so this, you might think, oh, this is just a part of the mundane physical world, right? But let me tell you how Or Shalom took this ordinary physical thing and made it, peeled back the layers and made it something more. This particular one, now there's like, we have a whole box of them, but this particular one was put up on a big pole and became a sign in a crowd of thousands and thousands of people at Civic Center for the Women's March. This little plush toy was also present at the Castro as we stood together pushing back against the hatred in Charlottesville, reclaiming prayer and religion as forces for good, not as a shield for hate in our world. This Torah, we're going to, Lillian had a great idea, we're going to have little ribbons with names of each of the things it goes to. This Torah is, I have a feeling, I hope you will see this particular one at some point during the year to come, because this Torah is absorbing more and more holiness and unpacking and revealing more and more holiness because of the way we're using it in the world. So that's just one little example. Okay, put away the visual aid. All right. So now we have the sense of this idea of tikkun olam and what it means, taking the ordinary, making it extraordinary, making it, using our physicality for holy purposes. And it's pretty empowering, this idea, right? Maybe if we're honest, it's a little intimidating too, to think that God needs our help. To think that we have the power to transform darkness and peel back shells that hide holiness. We have the power to mend the fabric of the universe and redeem bits of God and restore the original wholeness of our world. That sounds pretty grand. But as grand as it sounds, it doesn't necessarily ask us all to drop our daily routines and become social justice warriors. Rabbi Naomi Remen explains this in an interview with Krista Tippett in Tippett's new book, Becoming Wise. She says, we are healers of the world. It's not about healing the world by making a huge difference. It's about healing the world that touches you, that's around you, the world to which you have proximity. That's where our power is. Many people feel powerless in today's situations. We all feel that we're not enough to make a difference, that we need to be more somehow, wealthier or more educated or otherwise different than the people that we are. And according to this story of shattered vessels and lifting sparks, actually we are exactly what's needed. And let's just wonder about that a little bit. What if we were exactly what's needed? What then? How would I live if I was exactly what's needed to heal the world? And I just want to sit with that question. It's a wonderful question that Rabbi Remen is asking. Let's just sit with that for a minute. How would I live? How would you live? How would I live if I was exactly what's needed to heal the world? But I want to think about that question. We're going to think about it slowly because it's a question that touches many levels. The world to which we have proximity, the world that we touch, is complex. Of course, we and our bodies are a part of that world that needs healing. And if you have recently experienced a major medical issue or someone you know is doing that, is experiencing that, you'll have a fresh appreciation for the fact that our physical bodies are the foundation of everything we do. There are situations where our best efforts will be powerless to fix or change ailments and injuries, but there are also ways that we can support our own health and healing. So here's the question to sit with for a few moments. How would I live if I were exactly what's needed to heal the world of my own body? How would you live? Would you live differently in any way if you were living with the awareness of being exactly what's needed to heal your own body to the degree that we can, knowing we can't do everything? On the next level, our families and friends and work colleagues and neighbors are the human world to which we have the most natural proximity. So how would I live if I were exactly what's needed to heal the world of my relationships? What would you do differently? What would you do the same in order to heal the world of your relationships? Beyond our immediate connections and relationships are the worlds of community, city, state, nation, people, humanity. How would I live if I were exactly what's needed to heal the world of people I do not know face to face, but whose lives are connected to me in less obvious ways? What would I change? What would I maintain? And all of these worlds, our bodies, our relationships, our collective humanity, all of these worlds are a living part of the earth herself. How would I live if I were exactly what's needed to heal the earth? What would I change? What would I maintain? All of these worlds within worlds need tikkun, the self and the body, the interpersonal, the civic and collective, and the whole of the earth. And we intersect with all of them. Our actions and words have the power to heal and restore what is broken in each of these levels. So we have a lot of power, even if we don't always realize it. Say a blessing of gratitude before a meal. Raise a spark. Take a breath before you react to someone who just pushed your buttons. Raise a spark. Donate to an organization you believe in. Raise a spark. March peacefully with your city, saying no to hate. Raise a spark. Volunteer to feed the hungry. Raise a spark. Engage in a compassionate conversation with your relative or maybe former friend who voted differently than you did. Raise a spark. Or two. Or three. So while we're talking about sparks, I want to just give a shout out to something that you may or may not know is coming at Or Shalom, and that is a website that's on the way called Spark! Exclamation point. stay tuned for more. But the basic idea is that Spark is going to be a place to find out all about social action happening within Or Shalom and beyond, curated by our newly formed Tikkun Olam Committee, according to Or Shalom values and the real organizations and actions that our members are a part of. So if you're an Or Shalom member, you'll be invited to come and check out this virtual place called Spark and tune into the Tikkun Olam channel of Or Shalom. That's coming. But back to those sparks. They are as close as our own bodies and loved ones, and they are also calling out to us to be redeemed through the great social movements of our time. Sometimes I think I get stuck. I was thinking about this. I get stuck because I imagine that there's some kind of a zero-sum game going on. How much time and energy should I focus on those outer arenas, and how much should I focus on myself and my personal relationships? So I kind of set up this either-or. And at times we do have to make choices. Do I stay late for another meeting, or do I make it home for bedtime with my kids? Do I linger to finish a caring conversation, or do I cut it short so that I can start the service because the whole community is waiting? Do I spend my money on a massage or a donation? But there are also a lot of false choices that really are just the constructions of our minds, and I want to share one with you, a struggle of my own. So you've probably heard me confess this struggle before if you've been an Or Shalom member for a while. Here's what I do. I set up this false choice in my mind. Either I spend time taking care of me and my body, or I spend time caring for my family and my job and my community. Now, I could just make a daily routine and commit to a regular time which is non-negotiable. I could just build an hour into my life every day that I get to spend taking care of myself, exercise, yoga, whatever it is. No one would object. Okay, my kids would object. And they would intrude and they would demand and they wouldn't understand. But you wouldn't object. I know you wouldn't object. My husband wouldn't object. In fact, many of you keep urging me to do this, okay? And maybe I would have a little less time to do all the other things I do, one less meeting, maybe my sermons would be a little longer because I wouldn't have time to edit them as much. But probably in the net total, I would be a better wife and a better rabbi and a better mother during those times I am on duty if I really took care of myself. And I know this and I believe this. And I go to rabbi workshops where we repeat it to each other and we tell each other this great wisdom of self-care. You know, it's we all know. Do I do it? No, I do not do it. I do not do it. Well, sometimes I do, but I haven't figured out a way that sticks since I began to juggle being wife, mommy, and rabbi at the same time. I just haven't figured it out. And it's been 6 years now, almost seven, since I added the mommy title, and I just am still baffled, still struggling. And here, you hear me, I'm blaming my kids, but it's really me, right? And there they are, those unredeemed sparks that only I can release, trapped in my fat cells, waiting. But I'm too busy chasing sparks somewhere else to find them, right? So in this moment, life feels very saturated. It's very tempting and seductive to just go try to save the world out there. But as my colleague, Rabbi David Bauer, put it to me a few days ago, the moment isn't going to tell us when to come up for air. We have to tell ourselves to come up for air. So, you know, it's especially important in times like the times we're in right now to remind ourselves to make time for coming up for air, for resting, for maintaining our physical health, our emotional health, all those things. It feels like facing inward is a luxury, but it's actually also a total necessity. And as I say this, I've just told you, I'm telling you this, I'm preaching, I need to practice what I preach. I'm still not doing it, but, you know, there we are. On the other hand, you know, we probably all know people who may be out of balance in the other direction, attending only to the sparks that are within comfortable reach, focused only on the bubble of people who are like us, ignoring worlds upon worlds of other people out there. And for me, that was a big part of my wake up last November. And there's my little person. Let me just see what's going on. Daniel, do you need something? Yeah? Okay. Oh, he came for the sermon. All right. That's my boy. So for me, last November, that was a big part of the wake up. In the humbling weeks after the election, I realized that I've been way too quick to dismiss the pain of those I consider others. I've been reckless to ignore festering pools of lies and hate in the mass media. I didn't care about redeeming any sparks over there, but I should have. I thought those worlds couldn't impact me because they were so far away, and I was so wrong about that. It won't do to shine all of our multicultural, open-minded, progressive light just here in San Francisco, I'm afraid. Only among our like-minded Facebook friends. Much as we need it ourselves, we are going to have to find a way to reach out beyond those walls as well. And it will surely be humbling. We might learn something in the process about our own hubris, our own assumptions, the work we have yet to do on ourselves. We might find that there is light and love and pain and righteousness in those people that we judge so quickly. What would it look like to peel back the husks and search for the sparks in Alabama, in rural America, among those conservatives who may disagree on policy but who still value honesty and integrity and believe in honorable public service? And I believe that there still are those people. So I'd like to invite you to reflect for a few more moments and imagine one way that you can reach beyond your comfort zone to redeem a spark in a place that you don't ordinarily go. So just think about it. I'm asking you seriously here. Think about one way you could challenge yourself to move beyond your comfort zone and do some spark lifting in the coming week before Yom Kippur. Something that for you is reaching out of your normal zone. If it makes sense, you could maybe do this thing every day, make it a practice. If it's something that's a singular event, just do it once between now and Yom Kippur. All of us have different definitions of what's going to stretch us. Maybe it's calling an elected official for the first time. Maybe it's reaching out to a friend that you've lost touch with. Maybe it's giving more generously. Whatever it is, think of something specific. And if you're willing to share or to document that in some way, if there's some picture you could take or some sentence you could write, I'm inviting you to send it to us at Or Shalom. And we're going to find a way to post it so that we can see all the sparks that we can lift together if we stretch ourselves just during the 10 days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So raise a spark that you are not, you know, that's a little bit beyond what you've done before, and tell us about it. And if you're shy about it, you don't have to attach your name. You could just tell us. Don't say who raised this particular spark. And we'll see what we can generate and what we can shine into the world. And even as we're reaching out, I want to give us a little more permission again to just restore the light that's inside of us. And I'm going to read you a piece from a rabbi named Karen Kedar in just a moment. So during these high holy days, as we pause and think about the sparks that need redemption inside of us, outside of us, in our relationships, in the big collective, part of that turning, that teshuva, is remembering our inner light that is there and has been there ever since that first light of creation came into the world. Okay, so The Bridge to Forgiveness, this is a wonderful book, Karen Kadar. And you can even just close your eyes if you'd like to really tune in. Imagine that your soul is your inheritance from the days of creation, and that your soul is a brilliant beam of light beginning from above, running through your mind, into your core, and out through your heart. The light from creation that was never destroyed runs through you. It is eternal, divine, and powerful. It is what was before you were born, and it is what will be after you die. And as long as you have breath, it is what gives your life the capacity for holiness and goodness. It contains the great mysteries that you yearn to discover. It holds the secret of godliness and the very reason you were born. Imagine that. And so how would our lives be different if we only believed what we recite in the morning prayers? The soul you have given us is a pure one. And life becomes a complicated journey. You live among imperfect beings whose brokenness bumps into you at every turn. And from your earliest days, you begin to hurt. You fall when you try to walk. You are pushed when you begin to reach. You are ignored when you cry. From the beginning, living is a struggle between the beauty and the beast. I don't know why. It's like that sometimes. If your soul can be imagined as a brilliant beam of light originating from above, running through your mind, into your core, out through your heart, then every offense, every bit of criticism, every attack throughout your life has the capacity to diminish that light. And the dimming of the light within your being is the ultimate loss. It is as if each offense has the potential to form bits of dark crust around that brilliant beam, diminishing the light within. And periodically, the offense is so great that it shatters a bit of your light, splinters the beam like a bone that cannot bear the weight of it all. Can you imagine your light? Is it darkened or splintered? You have seen light and darkness in others as they light up your life or light up the room when they enter, and you've seen it in others when they are dark. It is almost as if they live in a cloud. Every act toward restoring your inner light is a step toward redemption. It is a journey of the spirit. It is the reason and the purpose of your life. To be created in the image of God is to be a creator of worlds, of the small corner of the universe you inhabit. It means that you heal, love, invent, bring joy, create, teach, and love again. It means that you are authentic and strong and powerful, for the truth of who you are is beauty. In the beginning, there was darkness and unformed void and the Spirit of God. And then God said, "Let there be light." And there was. And the poets and the teachers and the physicists and all the rest of us look for that light to this very day. I say, it is within you, waiting to be redeemed.